His voice trembles with rage. I need to be careful. You... I begin, but I can't go any further. He is too angry. My current gift is too strong. I struggle against it, working the muscles of my throat, my mouth. In my head is a string of silent curses. Why this gift? Why now? Why?
Cancel that message, he shouts to one of the technicians. It contains classified information that should not be shared.
One of the technicians looks from Ast to me.
I'm sorry, but whatever this is, she says, I don't want to be in the middle of it.
With a tap of a screen and the press of a button, my message, my last desperate call to Syra, is gone. I try to think of a current gift texture I haven't used against him before. Blankets and sweaters have never worked on him. Finery is a waste of time. Water doesn't affect him. I wish I knew more about the brim, or about the ship he grew up on, so I could suss out what's calming to him.
You try to control her with that evil power you call a gift, he says, and now you betray her to the very people she is fighting?
You try to control her too, I want to say. She could fight them without blowing up their city, I want to say. He speaks a command to the beetle in a language I don't know, and it lands on my shoulder, letting out its high-pitched whistle. He follows the sound, grabbing my upper arm. I jerk back, but he's too strong.
Hey, one of the technicians says. Let go of her, or I'll have to call security.
Ast releases me, and I stumble out of the room and into the hallway, shaken. I half walk, half run back to Issei's room, which is right next to mine. I am about to knock when I see that her light is already off. She's asleep. I want to get to her before Ast does, find a way to explain what I did that makes Ast seem irrational and paranoid. If I talk to her first, maybe I can destabilize whatever argument he has. Maybe... I need to think this through. I go to my room instead, so I can splash water on my face, careful to lock my door behind me. I go to the little bathroom attached to my room and stick my head in the sink. I drink straight from the faucet, and water runs into my ear. When my throat is soothed, I reach blindly for the towel and press it to my face. I think I hear something. Clicking. When I drag the towel down, Ast is standing behind me.
Do you know what the children of mechanics learn to do?
He says in a low voice.
Pick locks.
My current gift stifles me. It doesn't care that I'm in danger. It doesn't care for my survival. It just strangles me, keeping me from screaming. I grab for the glass near the sink so I can break it, make a noise. While I lunge for it, he lunges for me. Something glints silver in his fist. He's strong. His hand is big enough to hold both of my wrists. His hands fumble over me, then find my shoulders. I drop the glass, and it doesn't break. He lifts me to my toes, and I bite, finding the flesh of his arm. I bite down as hard as I can, so hard he groans and his skin tears. A hot pain spreads through my side. My shirt clings, wet, to my ribcage. In the mirror, I see fierce red spreading down my body the same way it spread around my father's head. It's the color of hush flowers, the color of blooming gowns and the glass dome of Hesse Temple. Red, the color of Thuva. He stabbed me. This is it. The first child of the family Kariseth will succumb to the blade. This is my fate, at last. He drops me, moaning over his arm, which bleeds in a half circle from where I bit him. I fall heavy on the floor. I haven't made a sound. No one will come get me if I don't make a sound.
I reach for the fallen glass as Ast tries to staunch the flow of blood from his arm. I'm going to pass out. But not yet. I raise the glass, and using all the strength I have left, I slam it against the stone floor as hard as I can. It shatters.
4. Agra. Noun. In Agran, the living dark.
Chapter 41. Akos. No one brought him food. The cell was lavish, as far as cells went. A soft bed with a heavy blanket. A tub in the bathroom as well as a shower. A thick rug on the hardwood floor. It was essentially just a bedroom with a sophisticated lock. One that Akos was sure he could dismantle if he had enough time. But then he would have an entire household of soldiers to contend with. He drank water from the faucet when he had to, but no food came his way, and he wasn't stupid enough to think it wasn't on purpose. If Lazmet had wanted him fed, he would have been fed. They were starving away his current gift. In the morning after he woke, the door finally opened. Akos was standing by the window, thinking about how bad it would hurt if he jumped out and made a run for it. Not a smart decision, he knew. He'd break both legs and get caught by a dozen guards, even if he did manage to run away. A tall man with a scarred face and a short, white-haired woman walked into the room. The man was Vakres Noavec, the commander of the Shotet military, who had seen to Akos's education as a soldier. The woman looked familiar to Akos, but he didn't remember her name. I don't understand, Vakres said, squinting at Akos. Oh, do catch on, Vakres, the woman said, with humor in her voice. Only Noaveks are that tall and yet that thin, like drawn hot glass. He's Lazmet's son, obviously. Hello, Commander. Akos said to Vakres, his head bobbing. I'm going to tell him your name and where you came from, you know, Vakres said to him. So what was the point of the evasion in the first place? It bought me time, Akos said. So you two know each other, the woman said, sitting in a chair by the fireplace. Akos had thought about climbing out the chimney, but after investigating, ruled out the possibility. It was too narrow for him to fit. He was a soldier. Not a very good one, Vakres said with a grunt. The woman raised an eyebrow. My name is Ima Zetsivis, boy. I don't think we've been formally introduced. Akos frowned at her. He knew her. Her husband and her daughter had both been subject to Syra's current gift before they died, and she had been glued to Rizek's side after that. What are you doing here? He asked. I thought you were both loyal to Rizek. And now, what, you just switch to his father before his body is even cold? I am loyal to my family, Vakres said. Why? Akos said. Didn't Lazmet's mother kill your mother? He paused. Why are you even still alive? I thought she killed everyone, including his cousins. He's useful, Ima said, brushing a lock of white hair over one shoulder. So he lives. That's the Noavec way. It is why I am alive as surely as it is why you are alive, boy. Vakres scowled at her. What use do you have to a man like Lazmet Noavec, sir? Akos couldn't help but add the honorific. He was used to seeing Vakres Noavec as this armored, authoritative thing. Someone to be feared. I read hearts, Vakres said, looking uncomfortable. Loyalties. Other things. It's hard to explain. And you? Akko said to Ima. He reads hearts, and I rip them apart. Ima examined her fingernails. We've been sent to assess you, if we can. Hold out a hand, boy, Vakres said. I have other work to do today. Akos's guts grumbled with hunger, but he couldn't feel the hum buzz of the current, so he knew his gift hadn't failed yet. He held out a hand, and Vakres grabbed him around the wrist, yanking him closer. He stared up into Akos's eyes, squinting, squeezing. His skin was warm and rough. Nothing, Vakres said. He'll need more starving time. Maybe a beating or two if Lazmet is impatient. I told him it was too soon, Ima said. He didn't listen, of course. He only listens to people he respects, Vakres said, and he only respects himself. Ima stood, straightening her skirts. She wore light gray, a pillar of pale against the dark wood of Noavek Manor. He wasn't sure what to make of her, the way her bright eyes lingered on him, the way she pursed her lips as she looked him over, like she wanted to say something but couldn't figure out what it was. Get some rest, boy, she said. You may need it. He had not eaten in days. Vakres had visited every so often to see if Akos's current gift had failed yet. But it was still clinging to him, even now, when he was too weak to do much more than sit next to the fire until it dwindled, and then stoke the flames again. That was where he was when Ima came to his room again. She wore blue, as pale as her eyes, draped artfully around her slim body. The combined effect of her pale hair, pale skin, and pale clothing made her almost glow in the dark. He hadn't gotten up to turn on the lights, so only the fire Vakres had stoked lit the room. She sat in the chair beside him, folding her hands in her lap. She had seemed confident when she was here with Vakres before, but now she rocked back and forth a little, tangling her fingers in her lap. She didn't look at him when she started to speak. He took me from my home when I developed my current gift, she said. There's no question that the he she was talking about was Lazmet. I had a sister and one living parent, my mother, she went on. I was low status, a nobody. He gave me clothes and food and vaccinations. For those things alone I would not have refused him. But you also don't refuse Lazmet Noavek, or you end up... She shivered slightly. Because he forced me to distance myself from my family, though, I was protected when they turned against him, so to speak. My sister Zosita taught languages, you see, in secret. Ima laughed softly. Imagine that. Becoming an enemy of the state just because you teach something. Akko squinted at her. I'm not good with faces, he said. But do I know you somehow? Other than seeing you at Rizek's side, I mean. You know my niece, Tekka, Ima said, still without looking at him. Ah, he said. I'm surprised, frankly, that Miss Noavek didn't tell you about me. She's more trustworthy than I gave her credit for, I suppose. She found me out the night before she felled her brother. I'm the one who poisoned Rizek before their confrontation in the amphitheater. Syra found you out? Akko said. As a spy, you mean? Of a sort, Ima said. I am uniquely positioned in that I can bend a person's heart toward me, if I stay close to them and do my work subtly, slowly. That's why Rizek kept me around even when my entire family was against him. But it is much more difficult with Lazmet. His heart is uniquely disconnected from everyone, everything. Hard as I try, I can't get him to budge an izzet in any direction. She turned toward him at last. He noticed that her lips were peeling, like she had gnawed on them one too many times. The skin around her fingernails, too, was raw. She was wearing thin, trying to keep Lazmet in her grasp. That much was clear. "You seem decent," she said. "Your affection for Miss Noavek notwithstanding. But I don't put my trust in other people. I wouldn't put it in you if I wasn't desperate." She reached somewhere in the folds of fabric wrapped around her and took out a small drawstring bag, the kind fancy people used to carry assembly chips, the general system currency which people of Chotet rarely used. She handed it to him, and when he opened it, his mouth filled up with saliva. She had brought him dried meat and bread. "We have to strike the right balance," she said. "You can't appear to be in vigorous health, or he'll suspect someone. But you need your current gift to work, and it's in shambles right now." It took all of Akos's willpower not to stuff the entire wad of dried meat in his mouth at once. "I'll teach you about him when I come in here. I'll teach you how to pretend with him that what I'm doing to your heart is working," she said. "I'm good at pretend these days." "Why are you doing this?" he said. "You are the only person I have ever met that he can't control with his current gift," she said. "Which means you are the only person who can kill him." Her eyes were wide. She seized his arm before he could lift the first mouthful to his lips. "I need your word that you will be committed to this. No half measures," she said. "You will do as I say, exactly as I say, even if what I tell you to do horrifies you." Akos was too desperate for food to really think it through, and besides, he didn't have many options. "Yes," he said. "Your word," she said, still not releasing him. "I give you my word," he said. "I'll do whatever I have to do to kill him." She took her hand away. "Good," she said. And she returned to staring at the fire while he stuffed his face.
Chapter 42. Syra. Those who sold their goods on carts along the main thoroughfare of Gallo were packing up for the day. I stopped to watch the woman who sold sculptures of blown glass, small enough to sit on a palm, wrap them in fabric and set them in a box, lovingly. The storms would come soon, but I would not see another storm on Agra. I moved along, toward the ship park where Tekka had left her transport vessel for safekeeping and repair. I passed a man waving smoked meat in my face, and Seema selling seedlings that snapped and bit at whatever came near them. I would miss the bustle of this place, so like the streets of Voa, but without the feeling of dread I got there. I had passed the last of the carts, piled with baskets of roasted nuts of all varieties, including some from other planets, when I saw a man crouched in the middle of the street, clutching at his own head. His shirt pulled taut across his shoulders, showing the bones of his spine. I didn't recognize him as Aija until I had already drawn closer. I recoiled at the recognition, bringing my hand back from his shoulder before I touched it. "Hey," I said instead, "Kariseth? What is it?" He twitched at his name, but didn't answer, so I took hold of his shoulder and jostled it a little. "Aija," I said. The name was still difficult for me to say, the only vowel consonant pattern in Thuvazit that I still struggled with. Though part of me knew Ija Karaseth was indeed my brother, I was equally certain that we could never be siblings to each other, because I couldn't even say his name. He lifted his head, his eyes swimming with tears. That, at least, was a familiar sight. Ija had always been prone to tears, unlike his brother. "What is it?" I asked him. "Are you ill?"
"No,"
he forced out.
"No, we got lost. In the future. I knew it was the worst outcome, but I had to see, I had to know."
"Come on," I said. "I'll take you to your mother. I'm sure she can help." I couldn't touch him, not on Agra, where my current gift was stronger, but I grabbed a fistful of his shirt, using it to yank him up. He lurched to his feet, wiping his eyes with the back of his hand. "You know," I said, "my mother used to tell me that those who go looking for pain find it every time." "I know," he said. I frowned. That was something only Rizek would know. Surely it had been in one of the memories Rizek gave Ija. As he wiped his eyes, I saw that his fingernails were bitten down to the beds, and his cuticles were chewed beyond repair. Also a habit of my brother's. Could he have learned a habit from memories? I pinched his sleeve and tugged him toward the temporary lodging I knew the Ogryns had given him and Sifa. It was nicer than the one I shared with Tekka, because it housed oracles, and it was right in the middle of town. I knew it by the flag, stitched with a red flower, that hung in the window, over the street. There was a narrow, creaky door between two shops that led up to the place. It had been painted so many times that in the places where the paint peeled, it showed different colors, orange, red, green. The top layer was dark blue. I pushed through it and pulled Ija up the narrow steps to the apartment above. I would have knocked, but the door was already open a crack. Sifa sat inside the living room, decorated with hanging fabrics, some thick and comfortable, others thin and gauzy. Her legs were crossed, her feet bare, her eyes closed. The very picture of a mystic. My mother. I hadn't spoken to her since the morning after I met with Vara. I had avoided her, in fact, pretending that knowing my origins had no impact whatsoever on who I was now. My mother was still Illyra Noavec, my father still Lazmet Noavec, my brother still Rizek Noavec. Acknowledging the truth of my origins meant admitting they had power over me. And I could not admit that. I wouldn't. I rapped on the door, pushing it open. Sifa turned.
"What happened?"
she said, coming to her feet. She was looking at Ija's tear-streaked face.
I didn't do what you told me," he said, wiping his eyes again. "I didn't ground myself. It was..."
Before they could get lost in their oracle oddities, as they always seemed to when they were together, I interrupted him. "Are you Rizek?" I said to Ija. Ija and Sifa both stared at me, blank. "When you first woke, you said we. We got lost in the future," I said.
"I don't know what you're talking about," he said.
"Oh?" I stepped toward him. So that wasn't my delusional, egocentric brother referring to himself in the royal we? I just started to shake his head. "It's not my brother who's biting your nails, picking at your food, spinning your blade, remembering our mother?" I said. I knew my voice was loud, maybe loud enough to hear through the walls, but I didn't care. I had seen my brother's body. I had shoved it into space. I had scrubbed his blood from the floor. I had buried my anger, my grief, my pity. My current shadows were now flowing down my arms, winding around my fingers, and slipping between the seams of my shirt. "Rizek?" I said.
"Not exactly," he replied.
"What, then?"
"We are Owi," he said. "Some of us is Aija, and some of us is Rizek. You've been..."
I struggled to find the way to phrase it. "Partly Rizek this entire time, and you said nothing?"
"After getting murdered?" he retorted. "Keep your current gift away from me."
The shadows were beneath my skin and on top of it, both, stretching toward him, itching to be shared.
"And you wonder why people don't like you?"
"I have never once wondered that," I said. "And you," I turned to Sifa, "you don't look surprised, as usual. You've known this whole time that a spy might be among us."
"He has no interest in spying," Sifa said. "He just wants to be left alone."
"Not a cycle ago, he murdered Orieva Benazit to keep Rizek in power," I said in a low voice. "And now you tell me he wants to be left alone?"
"As long as Rizek's body existed, we were trapped where we were,"
Aija, Rizek, whatever, replied, leaning close.
"Without it, we are free. Or we would be, if not for these damn visions."
"Those damn visions," I laughed. "You, Rizek, tortured Aija by trading memories with him in order to get those visions, if I recall correctly. And now you hate them?" I laughed again. "That seems fitting."
"The visions are a curse," he said, looking uncomfortable. "They keep throwing us into other people's lives, other people's pain."
My mind felt like an overstuffed toy, all the contents bursting the seams. It had never occurred to me that Rizek, in whatever form he now found himself, might not want the power he held. But when I thought of the Rizek I had known, the one who covered my ears in dark hallways and carried me on his back through Shotet crowds on the way to the Sojourn ship, it didn't seem so strange. But that wasn't right. Neither Rizek Noavek nor Aija Karaseth deserved to be free from the consequences of what they had done. "Well, now it's not just the visions throwing you into other people's pain," I said. "Because you're coming with me to Urek."
"No, we're not."
I leaned in close, so close we were sharing breath, and lifted both hands, holding them over Aija's face. My current shadows were so dense now that I had no trouble displaying my power in all its horror, the dark tendrils weaving over my skin and under it, staining me and enfolding me. Pain shrieked through every izzet of me, but having a goal had always helped me to think through pain. "Come with me," I said in a harsh whisper. "Or I will kill you right now with my bare hands. You may have some of Rizek's learned skill, but you are still in the body of Aija Karaseth, and he is no match for me in a foot race or a fight or even a goddamn contest of wills."
"Threats," he gritted out. "I would say they are beneath you, but they never have been, have they?"
"I prefer to think of them as promises," I said, smiling, all teeth.
"Why do you even want us to go?"
"I am doing something that requires expertise in the habits of Lazmet Noavek," I said. "And your mind is a treasure trove." He opened his mouth to object, and Sifa spoke over him.
"He will go," she said. "And so will I. Our time here is done."
I wanted to argue, but my logical side couldn't quite manage it. It wouldn't hurt to have not one, but two oracles on board to help with our assassination plan. Even if one contained my evil brother, and the other was the biological mother who abandoned me. It was ridiculous. But so was much of the galaxy.
Chapter 43, Akos. The most imminent of our problems is Vakres, Ema said. Akos lay on the floor by the fireplace, his guts grumbling. He had gotten faint earlier while walking back from the bathroom and, rather than getting up when Ema came in, had just flopped onto his back. She shoved another satchel of food into his hand, and he took it, not half as eager as he'd been the last time she came. He'd discovered that half a meal was almost worse than no meal at all. Still, he ate it, this time pacing himself so he could savor every bite. You have no control over your current gift? No, Akos said. I never really thought about it as something that could be controlled. It's possible, Ema said. I was with Rizek when he ordered your current gift starved away. He wasn't sure that it would work, but it's always worth a try if you want to disable someone's gift. It worked, Akos said. That was the first time I felt Cyrus' current gift. The thought brought a sharp, hot sensation to his throat. He swallowed it down. Well, Ema said, that it was possible to turn yours off then suggests that you may be able to have more mastery over your gift now. Oh? He rolled his head to the side. And how's that? I told you that my family was low status. Well, what the Noavek seem to understand that others in the galaxy do not is that low-status people have just as much value. We have long histories, recorded lineages, recipes, and secrets. She rearranged her skirt as she crossed her legs the other way. The fire crackled. We have passed along some exercises that help a person learn to control their current gift, she said. For some, those exercises obviously don't work, but I can teach them to you if you promise to practice. That way you can turn off your current gift to let Vakres read your heart, and turn it back on to resist Lazmet's control when the time comes. What exactly does Lazmet want? Akos said. What did he tell you to do to me? He calls me the Heartbender, she said. What I do is too abstract for words, but I can shift a person's loyalties over time. I take the raw feeling that's there, your love for your family, or your friends, or your lover, and change it so it leads you to a different destination, so to speak. That, Akos said, closing his eyes, is horrifying. He wants me to bend your heart toward him, she said. Get up. You're wasting my time, and there isn't much of it to spare. Can't, Akos said. Head hurts. I don't care if your head hurts. You try half-starving for days, he snapped. I have, she bit out. Not everyone grew up wealthy, Mr. Karaseth. Some of us are familiar with the weakness and aches that come from hunger. Now get up. Akos couldn't say much to that. He sat up, darkness washing over his vision, and turned toward her. Better, she said. We have to talk about your game of pretend. The next time you stand before him, he will expect to see some kind of shift. You must behave as if that's the case. How do I do that? Pretend your resolve is weakening, she said. It shouldn't be too difficult. Let him get something out of you. Some kind of information he wants. That doesn't compromise your mission. Tell me your mission. Why? Akos furrowed his brow. You know my goddamn mission. You should be telling yourself your mission every single moment of every day so you don't cost us everything. Tell me your mission. Kill him, Akos said. My mission is to kill him. Is your mission to be loyal to your family, your friends, your nation? Akos glared at her. No, it isn't. Good. Now, the exercise. She directed Akos to a chair and told him to close his eyes. Come up with an image for your current gift, she said. Yours separates you from the current. So you could think of it as a wall, or a plate of armor, something like that. Akos had never much thought about the power that lived in his skin, mostly because it seemed less like the presence of power than the absence of it. But he tried to think of it as armor, the way she said. He remembered the first time he had dropped armor over his head, the weaker, synthetic kind, when he was first sent to train at the soldier camp. The weight had surprised him, but it had been comforting in a way. Think of the details and what it looks like. What is it made of? Is your armor made of different plates stitched together, or is it one solid piece? What color is it? He felt stupid, picturing imaginary armor, picking colors like he was decorating a house instead of trying to pull off an assassination plot. But he did what she said, calling the armor dark blue because that was the color of his Urn's Chotet armor, and plated for the same reason. He thought of his real armor's scrapes and dings, the signs that he'd put it to good use, and Syra's nimble fingers as she pulled the straps taut for the first time. What does it feel like? Is it smooth or rough? Is it hard or flexible? Is it cold or warm? Akos wrinkled his nose at Ima, but didn't open his eyes. Smooth, hard, warm as the kutya fur he had once worn to protect himself from the cold. The thought of that old coat, with his name written on the tag so he wouldn't mix it up with Cece's, made him feel achy. Hold the most vivid imagining of your current gift that you can. I'm going to put a hand on you in 3, 2, 1. Her cool fingers pressed to his wrist. He tried to think of his Chotet armor again, but it was hard with his memories all jumbled. Cece trying to stuff her long arms into a child's coat, Syra holding his shoulder steady as she yanked at the armor straps. You're not focused, Ima said. We don't have time to work on this, so you'll have to practice on your own. Try different images, and try a modicum of self-discipline. I'm disciplined, he snapped, opening his eyes. It's easy to be disciplined when you're well-fed and healthy, she retorted. Now you need to learn it when your brain is barely functioning. Try it again. He did. This time imagining his coat of kutya fur in Thuva, which was another kind of armor against the cold. He felt its tickle against the back of his neck where the coat ended and his hat began. He tried this image twice more before Ima checked the delicate watch she wore around her wrist and announced that she had to go. Practice, she told him. Vakras will come to you later, and you need to be able to pretend. I need to master this by later today, he demanded. Why do you have this expectation that life will make concessions for you? She scowled. We are not promised ease, comfort, or fairness, only pain and death. With that, she left. Her speeches are almost as encouraging as yours, he said to the Syra in his mind. He tried to practice what Ema had taught him. He did. It was just that he couldn't get his mind to focus on one thing for more than a couple minutes at a time, so it wasn't long before he wavered. He walked the periphery of the room, pausing to peer out the slats in the window coverings, which were the same dark wood as the floor. They were elegant bars for a prisoner, he thought. He hadn't done much thinking about his dad, not since his death. Every time thoughts of him did come up, they were an intrusion, and he shifted his focus back to the greater mission of rescuing Aija as he had promised. But in this place, hungry and confused, he couldn't do much to keep them out. The way Ausa had gestured, big and unwieldy, knocking things off the table or smacking Aija in the head by mistake. Or how he had smelled like burnt leaves and oil from the machinery in the ice flower fields. The one time he had shouted at Akos for a bad score on a test, then broke down into tears when he realized he had made his youngest son cry. Ausa had been big and messy with his emotions, and Akos had always known his dad loved him. He had wondered more than once, though, why he and Ausa didn't seem to be anything alike. Akos held everything close, even things that didn't need to be secret. That instinct toward restraint, he realized, made him more like the Noliveks. And Syra, bursting at the seams with energy, opinions, even anger, was more like his dad. Maybe that was why it had been so hard not to love her. Vakras came in, and Akos wasn't sure how long the commander had been there before he cleared his throat. Akos stood, blinking at him for a few ticks, then sat heavily on the edge of the bed. He had meant to brainstorm a better image for his current gift. He hadn't done it. Now Vakras would find out that Akos was getting his strength back, and he would be suspicious. Shit, Akos thought. Ema had suggested armor, a wall, a protective barrier between Akos and the world. None of those things had felt right when she said them, but what else was there? Are you all right, Kariseth? Vakras asked him. How's your husband, Malin? Akos said. He had to buy some time. He's fine, Vakras said, narrowing his eyes. Why? Always liked him, Akos said with a shrug. Could ice be a protective barrier? He knew ice well enough. But it was something to be wary of at home, not something that protected you. He's nicer than I am, Vakras said with a grunt. Everybody likes him. Does he know you're here? What about a metal casing, like an escape pod or a floater? No, he didn't really know those as well. He is, and he told me to be kinder to you, Vakras smirked. Said it might help you open up more. Very strategic. I didn't think you needed me to open up, Akos said darkly. You pretty much just get to dig around in my heart no matter what I say about it, don't you? I suppose. But if you are not intentionally obfuscating your emotions, it is easier to interpret them. Vakras beckoned to him. Stick out your arm. Let's get this over with. Akos rolled up his sleeve, exposing the blue marks he had stained into his skin with Shotet ritual. The second one had a line through the top of it, and noted the loss of the armored one he had killed in pursuit of higher status. He found himself returning to that place, to the fields just beyond the feather grass, where the wildflowers were fragile and mushy, and the armored ones roamed, avoiding anything that transmitted too much current. The one he had killed had been relieved to find him. He had been a respite from the current. Akos had felt a kind of kinship with it then, and he felt that kinship again now. Imagining himself monstrous, with too many legs and a hard, plated side, his eyes dark and glittering, hidden under an overhang of rigid exoskeleton. Then, with a shock of violence, he imagined that exoskeleton riven in two. And he felt it. The second the current rang through him again, buzzing in his bones. Vakras nodded to himself, his eyes closed, and Akos focused on keeping the wound open, so to speak. Ema told me she would use her gift to encourage you to dwell on your devotion to your father. Kariseth, that is, not Noavik, Vakras said. I see she's been successful. Akos blinked at him. Had Ema done something to him when she was there, to make him think of Ausa? Or was it just a coincidence that he had? Either way, it was lucky. You don't seem well, Vakras said. That's what happens when your biological father imprisons you in his house and starves you for days, Akos snapped. I suppose you're right, Vakras pursed his lips. Why do you do what he says? Everyone does what he says, Vakras said. No. Some people stop being cowards and leave, Akos said. But you're just staying, hurting people. Vakras cleared his throat. I'll tell him about your progress. Will that be before or after you prostrate yourself before him and kiss his feet? Akos said. To his surprise, Vakras didn't say anything. Just turned and left. Lazmet was seated at a table by the fire when Akos was escorted to his quarters again. The room looked like the one Akos had unlocked when he first came to this place. Dark wood panels, reflecting shifting fenzu light, soft fabrics and dark colors, books stacked on almost every surface, a comfortable place. Lazmet was eating, roasted dead bird, spiced with charred feathergrass, with fried fenzu shells on the side. Akos's guts rumbled. It wouldn't be so difficult to snatch some food off the table and shove it in his mouth, would it? It would be worth it to taste something that wasn't pickled or dried or bland. It had been so long. That's a bit childish, don't you think? He managed to say after swallowing a mouthful of saliva. Taunting me with food when you're starving me? Akos knew this man wasn't really his dad. Not in the way Ausa Kariseth had been. Teaching him how to button up his coat, or how to fly a floater, or how to stitch up a boot when the sole came loose. Ausa had called him smallest child before he knew that Akos would end up being the biggest. And he had died knowing he couldn't keep Akos from being kidnapped, but trying, fighting, anyway. And Lazmet just looked at him like he wanted to take him apart and put him back together again. Like he was something you dissected in a science class to see how it worked. I wanted to see how you would react to the presence of food, Lazmet said, shrugging. Whether you were animal or man. You've brought Ema Zatsivis in with the specific purpose of altering what I am. Whatever I am, Akos said. What does it matter what the before is when you're controlling the after? I'm a curious man. You're a sadist. A sadist delights in suffering, Lazmet said, lifting a finger. His feet were bare, his toes buried in the soft rug. I do not delight. I am a student. I find satisfaction in learning. Not pain, for the sake of pain. He covered his plate with the napkin that lay across his lap and stepped away from the table. It was easier for Akos to deny himself the impulse to lunge at the plate when he couldn't see it anymore. Ema had told Akos to pretend his resolve was weakening. That was the goal of this meeting, to prove to Lazmet that his methods were working, but not to be too obvious about it, so Lazmet became suspicious. Ema had helped him find his way again. He had been aimless since Rizek died, and since his hope for Ija's restoration died too. He had not had a side, a mission, a plan. But Ema had helped him find his way back to the same pinhole focus that he had directed at his brother since his arrival in Shotet. He would kill Lazmet. Nothing else mattered. He had betrayed Thuva. He had abandoned Syra. He had lost his name, his fate, his identity. He had nothing to return to when this was over, so he had to make it count. "So you are a Thuvazit, I hear," Lazmet said. "I always thought the revelatory tongue was a legend, or at the very least an exaggeration." "No," Akos said. "I find words in it that I didn't even know existed." "I'd always wondered," Lazmet said. "If you don't have a word for a thing, can you still know what it is? Is it something that lives in you that goes unarticulated? Or does it disappear from your awareness entirely?" He picked up his glass, which contained something purple and dark, and sipped from it. "You may be one of the only people who can possibly know, but you don't seem to have the capacity to answer." "You think I'm stupid," Akos said. "I think you've programmed yourself to survive, and you have little energy for anything else," Lazmet said. "If you had not had to fight to live, perhaps you could have become a more interesting person. But here we are. The only reason I care about being interesting to you," Akos thought, "is because I'm pretty sure you'll kill me if I'm not. There's a word in Ogryn. Kirta," Akos said. "It's a life-changing truth. It's what brought me here. The knowledge that you and I were related." "Related," Lazmet said. "Because I had sex with a woman and she handed you off to an oracle. Everyone in the damn galaxy has parents, boy. It's hardly a unique achievement." "Then why did you care what color my eyes were?" Akos said. "Why did you have me brought here to speak to me again?" Lazmet didn't answer. "Why did you bother," Akos said, stepping toward him, "to turn Rizek into a murderer?" "The word murderer is reserved for people we don't like," Lazmet said. "Anyone else, and they're a warrior, a soldier, a freedom fighter. I trained my son to fight for his people." "Why?" Akos said, tilting his head. "What do you care for his people? For your people?" "We are better than them," Lazmet said, slamming his glass down on the table beside his chair. He stood. "We learned the reaches of this galaxy when they hadn't even come up with names for themselves. We know what is valuable, what is fascinating, what is important, and they throw it away. We are stronger, more resilient, more resourceful. And they have somehow managed to keep us low since they became aware of us. We will not remain low. They do not deserve to be above us." "You think of the Shotet as you," Akos said. "I see." "You have your ideals, I am sure. You have that shine in your eyes, Lazmet sneered a little. And I have something else. And that's... what? Akko said. Cruelty? Curiosity? I want, Lazmet said. I want, and I will take whatever I can get my hands on, even if it is you. Lazmet came toward him. He hadn't noticed before that he was taller than his father. Not by a lot, because Lazmet towered over most people, but by enough that it was noticeable. Akos imagined himself as the armored one, and eviscerated himself for the 10th time that day. He had been practicing since Valkrez left the day before. He had barely slept in order to practice. He had learned to suppress his current gift quickly, and to bring it back just as quickly. It required all of his energy, but he was improving. He felt the presence of Lazmet's current gift against his mind, and he gave in to it. It was strange, the sensation like someone wiggling a wire into his head and touching it, lightly, to the part of his brain that controlled his movements. His fingers twitched, then tapped together, without him telling them to. Lazmet's mouth twitched as he registered the movement, and Akos felt the imaginary wire retract. Valkrez has given fascinating reports on the state of your insides, Akos, Lazmet said. I have never seen him puzzle quite so much over someone. He says you are making progress in the right direction. Eat shit, Akos said. Lazmet smiled a little. You should sit, he said. I'm sure you're tired. Lazmet crossed into the sitting room. It was a simple room with a soft rug by a fireplace, and bookshelves packed with books in all languages. Lazmet sat in the armchair next to the fire, sliding off his shoes and burying his toes in the plush of the carpet. Akos followed, hesitant, and stood by the fire. He was tired, but he wanted to take his little rebellions where he could get them. Instead of sitting, he braced himself on the mantel and stared into the flames. Someone had dusted them with some kind of powder that turned them blue just at the edges. You grew up with an oracle, Lazmet said. Do you know that I spent much of my adult life trying to find an oracle? Did you try looking in a temple? Akko said. Lazmet laughed a little. You realize, of course, that it's not simply a matter of going where they are. Capturing someone who knows you are coming is nearly impossible. Which is why I confess I am confused as to why your mother left you and your brother to be stolen away. She must have known you would be taken. I'm sure she did, Akko said bitterly. She must also have believed it was necessary. That is cruel, Lazmet said. You must be angry. Akos wasn't sure how to answer. He wasn't Syra, digging in her claws wherever she could, though he definitely understood the impulse. You know, I'm not sure I understand your strategy here, he said eventually. And there is one, so don't disrespect me by pretending there isn't. Lazmet sighed. You're being boring again. But maybe you're right. I do have something I want from you, and something I'm willing to trade. He crossed the room again, going to the table where he had covered up his meal. The smell still lingered in the air, juicy meat and rich sauce, with the feather grass burned just to the point where its hallucinogenic qualities disappeared and only its spicy flavor remained. Lazmet moved to the next seat at the table and lifted a metal dome that had been covering the place sitting there, revealing another roasted dead bird, another side of fried fenzu shells,